Greetings, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the podcast. This episode might be a difficult one to listen to for some of you out there, but first, I want to introduce you to my guest this week before talking about that. This week, I interview Susan Gold, who was raised in a challenging and chaotic family system, the middle child of five. Professionally, Susan became known for attaching celebrity talent to projects in New York City, which then led her to produce for television and film and on to Los Angeles. We talk a little bit about that and a little bit about her professional life after escaping her family, but really it's about her book that came out later in life, Toxic Family: Transforming Childhood Trauma into Adult Freedom. Now, back to that trigger warning for this episode. We do discuss childhood abuse and violence and the challenge of revisiting those memories as adults. But, and there's a big but here, it's ultimately an episode about forgiveness, reconciliation, and compassion. Not only for ourselves, but for those who hurt us. It's a powerful episode and a powerful reminder that we're all walking around with trauma, whether from our childhood, our ancestors, or even last week. And we all have the capacity to work with this trauma, to reshape it, remold it, and rework it into mulch, into something rich that we can use to bring even more beauty into our lives. We don't have to be defined by what we've experienced. We can be informed by it, and we can also create the reality we want to live in and rise above our hurts and wounds. And that's exactly what Susan has done so very beautifully. So take care of your hearts while you listen to this episode. It's a powerful one.
She just flipped. She could be so loving and then flip into this monster. And as I grew into puberty and as a teenager, it got worse. I mean, the violence, she'd beat me with a wooden spoon, with any object that she could get her hands on. The rules would twist and turn. I didn't know where I stood. And after a period of separation and a lot of work, I could uncover where she came from.
How would you introduce yourself? Who are you?
Well, Kirsten, that's changed, you know, because I've come to understand myself on a deeper level once I could jump off the gerbil wheel of post-traumatic stress and slow down enough to take a breath and really say, and I think that's part of our human exploration. Who are we? I've metamorphosized so much, but right now I'd have to say I'm an alchemist. I'm a transformationalist. I take crap, heartache, hardship, challenges, and turn them into beauty and show how they can lead to authentic freedom. And that's a gift and a privilege. I lived a very glittering life, what looks glittering from the outside, and, you know, matching celebrities to brands and then going on to be a producer and working with household names. But I feel the universe is finally led me to purpose. And if people are listening and can see the visual, I have a photo. Every day I take a photo because I can't shoot into my background. But I went from New York and LA, living in very rural Montana. And this is the bliss of my back door. Today, it's incredible here. And I feel really privileged. And it's been a journey, one that's been magical, when I've been able to let go of the control and allow the magic of the universe to help me. And I have a feeling you're going to identify and that your listeners will identify to our conversation, which I'm so privileged to have. Congratulations to you. Most podcasts don't go more than 6 episodes, and here you are into the high hundreds, and brava to you. Brava.
Thank you so much. I think it helps that I'm addicted to meeting new people and I can't stop. I have to tell you that decades ago now, I took a train from Chicago to Montana and had never been in Montana. And it was to visit a dear friend. And I got off that train and she drove me from northern Montana to southern Montana where she lived. And I could not handle the expanse and the sky. And I don't even know how to articulate it, but it was so big that it overwhelmed me. Did you have that did that happen to you?
Well, Montana wasn't even on my bucket list. You know, I was happy in SoCal. I was going to stay there, but the universe had other desires. And honestly, where I live is not where I thought I would live. Montana was, not on my radar. And I thought, if you lived in Montana, you live in the forest. You don't live on the prairie. Why would you move from Southern California to the prairie in Montana? That makes no sense. I am so blessed because you're right. It is so expansive. This is Sedona before it got polluted. It's like the energy is beyond surreal. I'm so fortunate. And out the back window, it looks like the Swiss Alps. And down the side, it looks like the Nepali coast of Kauai. And up front, it looks like Tuscany. And I didn't have any idea. Actually, when I looked at the property I live on and in, the views were totally obscured by cloud cover both times. So I just had to trust not just the real estate person, but the universe. And I've been let out of cubicle prison. I mean, I'm so grateful to have lived in New York City all the years that I did, and then in LA, and I had a lovely home, but I feel like my spirit has been let out of the genie bottle and I can breathe and my soul can grow and expand.
I mean, I am looking at your background and I can testify to the listeners that it's gorgeous. And I will put a photo of it up on the website on the treasures page because it's a really beautiful. So I guess you didn't have that experience I did. I felt claustrophobic, which is so antithetical to the idea of the large sky, but it just felt like it was crowding me. I managed to get over it after a few days, but it is spectacularly gorgeous there. And, you know, when I lived in Portland, I would take the train to Chicago and it would always astonish me that I'd go to bed the night before, sleep on the train, wake up the next day, and we were still in Montana. And I thought, what is happening here? What is happening? Because the state is so long. But also gorgeous, which redeems it. When we were going through the mountains on the train, I did get to see a grizzly once. So that really, really was fabulous. It was crossing a road that was down below the train. But it was, I mean, where else are you going to see things like that? And then, you know, whenever the train would go through Glacier, the entire staff comes out and waves at the train. It's super charming. So it's a friendly state. Mm-hmm. I kind of loved it. I looked forward to that every time I took the train. And I love that you brought up the fact that you lived in New York, you lived in LA, Southern California. It was a glittery life, or a life that people, maybe in their imaginations or their fantasies, they think, oh, if I could live that life, if I could attain that, everything would be perfect. But, you know, I just interviewed Janet Davidson, who was an assistant director, Cagney and Lacey, Remington Steele. And, you know, that saying, all that glitters is not gold. And it sounds like some of your jobs were very, very high stress. And I feel like when we're younger, we can do that. But as we get older, it gets harder, or we're just not willing to put up with as much nonsense, which is what I call it. Would you say that that's true of your journey?
Well, it was a metamorphosis. I've always felt like an outsider. I didn't fit in. My two corporate jobs were at ICM, which is a large global talent agency, and then at Fox. I helped launch Fox News Channel. And it just didn't feel right to me. I didn't understand the energy. I didn't understand the intense control. And I didn't understand sort of the veil around the celebrities, the known figures that would come in, because I knew they were putting on their pants legs one at a time in the morning and in public, you know. So how painful is that? And I always had huge compassion for who they are. And I think that empathic ability was with me probably since I've come in. It certainly kept me safe growing up in the family environment that I grew up in. And, you know, my first deal I made on my own was to knock on the door of the factory and convince Andy Warhol to do a commercial for Pontiac that he didn't want to do at all. But I could feel his isolation. I could feel his desire to really connect. I could feel his lonely heart so deeply. And there were three pugs running around the studio where he was penciling. I shouldn't call it scribbling. He's a master modern artist, but, you know, and he could care less what I was saying to convince him to do this commercial. It was all about his dogs. And I could intuit that. And I could intuit his bond were his dogs. I mean, here's someone who's globally renowned. And, you know, he's trying to find connection with his dogs, which is beautiful. I did the same in my household growing up. I confided in my dog, but, you know, I resonated. And finally, he looked over at me. It was the first time he made eye contact with me. And he said, "Now, really, why should I do this commercial?" And I just said, "Because the dogs can be in the shot with you." Like, I didn't really know if that was true or not, but I knew it was the way that he might agree to do this. And he did. And, you know, I'm so grateful for that connection. And I think that I've had that connection. And I think that's part of the reason I was successful matching celebrities to brands and then going on to produce. And it's also what's making me successful now that I've found my actual authentic soul purpose.
You know, I think when I was a kid, I didn't understand that, you know, I had deep empathy and could understand what was going on around me. It's just like such a huge thing. You kind of, for me, I was just trying to survive. And so, I mean, when did you get the first inkling that this might be a superpower that you could utilize to navigate the world with grace?
So I'm so glad you brought that up. And I could intuit that just by the podcast conversations that I've listened to of yours. You're a huge empath, and probably a lot of your listeners tuning in are empathic. So I knew there was something really awry in my family very early on. I have memories back to 18 months, and it's almost like I grew up in a different home than my sister and my three brothers. I was the peacekeeper in between two parents who were oil and vinegar. It was battery acid. My dad's a genius astrophysicist, but he also uncorked that whiskey bottle at 7:30 a.m. and you would hear glug, glug, glug. And he had a little issue with womanizing, and he was a bit of a Peter Pan. And my mother was devout. She had five children before she was 30 and pretty much left to care for them on a consistent basis. And she brought abuse into the relationship. Her father, my grandfather, was beaten almost to the point of death. And that brought on psychotic episodes for him. And he, in turn, inflicted that on my mother. And she, in turn, was expected to pretend everything was okay. You know, denial was the word. So here she is creating her own family of choice, and she's creating what's familiar, and she soothed with food, Well, back then, when you were a compulsive overeater, diet pills were prescribed. And that was straight speed. So I was being raised by two addicts, and it was a very chaotic, dangerous environment. And when you're an empath, you can intuit the mood of the room, the tenor, the tone, the emotions. And I'll take it a step further in that I was highly telepathic until I shut it down. I could get full sentences of what people were feeling and thinking, and I would automatically say what I thought about what they were thinking and feeling. And it caused a lot of problems and became too dangerous. And I shut that ability down. So I knew that there was something different about me. People would remark about it, but it felt dangerous. And I have to say, there were points in my adulthood where that empathic, intuitive ability would surface, but I would quite often shut it right down. I really got into meditation. Meditation helped me survive. It got me into the now moment rather than living in the past and the traumatic episodes. But it also got me heavily into my gifts. And it was too terrifying. I didn't know how to function. So it's really been in the past, I'd say 5 years, that they've started to unveil. And I see the gifts in the abilities, probably as you see yours the same.
Yes, I always think to myself, you know, some of these things are a blessing and a curse.
Yeah, I think I'm going to read the fine print next time when I come in a little more closely, like seriously. Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, when you are sensitive or you can discern things that other people cannot around you, you know, it's really hard to fake it. Just fake being around people or fake trying to understand who they are or their motivations, it's challenging. And so a lot of times I find I have to pretend and act like everyone else so that I fit in, because sometimes exchanges are so confounding for me that I'm like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do or say, but I'm just going to observe, which I love watching people, because I think humans are fascinating. They're fascinating. And we're all kind of walking through this world operating on a lot of unconscious things that we don't really understand we're operating through. But it is interesting how people can get together. And, you know, I really resonate with women, especially, like, there will either be an instant heart connection or there won't be. And it's the people that I have that instant heart connection with. It's like this feeling of coming home and instant connection and just love. Someone I literally just met, but there's something there that's so profound and so intimate, almost very intimate. And it feels like I've come home. Do you ever experience that?
Oh, yes. Often now, for sure. Now that I feel safe to let that out and come into the open. And I've been told multiple times that I'm from the angelic realm. Maybe I've been in Southern California for too long before I got to Montana, but, and I definitely, my father says, you know, you don't even seem like you belong in this family. And people that see photos, you know, they don't get it. But I really feel I was placed in that family with point and purpose. And I think it is beautiful when you're connecting with another on a soul level. And it is beautiful because those connections are probably authentically members of your soul family who you agreed to come here with on your mission.
I know I'm instantly like, oh, can we be BFFs? Can we like hang out? Or, hey, come on over here and hang out a little bit, but with boundaries, with healthy boundaries, for sure. Well, you alluded a little bit to your childhood and just what was going on. But, you know, my second question always is, did you grow up in a religious household? I'm just curious about that. And if you did, how did you kind of reconcile the fact that you had this burgeoning ability or these abilities with the religion that your family was possibly, you know, practicing?
My mother was very religious and we were staunch. But the faith was into mysticism and the unknown. So that helped a little bit, but unfortunately it was heavy into the patriarchy. And my father was an atheist, I would say, and didn't participate, but he's made a full 360 now. And he's totally into the faith that my mother was schooled in. And obviously I'm not going to name it because for a lot of people, it works. And I honor that. But I would have stare downs from the congregation at the one doing the preaching, because it was to me so inauthentic and the dogma was so heavy, but it stuck with me. I mean, I was being trained for, you know, some rite of passage, and the teacher giving the lesson, I remember I was 7 years old and she pointed her finger and I felt like she was pointing straight at me, that I killed Jesus and God would never forgive me. And I was 50 years old before I really unpacked and unveiled that shame and that brutal messaging.
I have had many conversations with many guests on the show who, when they were children, were really, really wounded by the idea that they were complicit in this really horrible and violent and scary death, the death of Jesus. And it's been interesting, the journeys that every single one has taken to kind of unpack that and work with it and kind of release the trauma that they took on. And I've often said on the show, like, it's astonishing how, you know, without meaning to, these really empathic and sensitive and precious kids, we give them the story that kind of irrevocably marks them or breaks them and ask them to carry it. And it's such a big thing for a child to carry. And, you know, no wonder there's a little bit of backlash or rebellion around that. So thank you for telling me that. That's not an easy story to tell, because, you know, it's like, how do you reconcile childhood trauma? Oh my gosh, how many ways are there in the world to figure that stuff out? But it's easier to talk about once you've kind of engaged in a dialogue or a conversation with it and worked with it a little bit, made it a little more malleable. So thank you for telling me that.
I didn't even understand that I had the childhood trauma that I did. I didn't know any differently. I mean, when I wrote my book and it came out, people I'd gone to high school with, my college boyfriend, they were horrified. They had no idea I was experiencing what I was in that household, because the don't tell syndrome is so intensified. And as far as, you know, clearing religious trauma, clearing family of origin trauma, I mean, really, it goes back into the ancestry. I don't blame my parents at all. They were hurt and abused children, raising hurt and abused children. And it goes way back. We are carrying things that have nothing to do with us ultimately. And it's part of the patriarchy. It's part of the morose programming, unfortunately. And I'm just grateful that I had the opportunity to wake up and see it in a different light without judgment. I mean, my faith, my early schooled faith has helped me in certain ways, the discipline of it, the mysticism of it. That's helped me, and I appreciate that. But the shame, blame, guilt, and putting me in a little box, you know, a controlled box, bound and gagging me, yeah, that I'm going to surrender and give back. Thank you. And I think that's been crucial, and that's what makes me, you know, a little bit different. People don't understand how I could go through abuse of every type, slathered in every crevice, and now have a loving relationship with my family. How I can call my ex-husband my greatest guru as a teacher, because I can see my challenges and my challengers and those who have played a role in my life as playing it perfectly, perfectly placed. It's an opportunity for me to open, to see this from a new perspective and really go, hey, wow. this is an opportunity for me to change my behavior. Thank God I'm not in their meat suit, but bless them. God forbid, you know, I had to face what they're facing without the tools that I have and I've created. So, you know, forgiveness is the ultimate freedom. And it's not for everybody. And it's taken me a long while, you know, to process and to come to this place. And I really feel it's the more somatic modalities, you know, going into the body, feeling, meditation, exercise, getting out in nature, than the traditional talk therapy, which I did too for decades. And I'm grateful for it. It helped me really get the storyline down. But ultimately, it served to just re-traumatize me and lead me straight back to the circle where I started.
Ask you about this because I think it's really interesting. Four or five times in my life, I've had random strangers come up to me and like give me a prophecy, which my friends are like, why does this always happen to you? And I'm like, I don't know. Because I'm stubborn or because everyone knows that I'll give up or whatever. But the first one was when I was outside seminary and I was under a tree reading, and this woman walked by who looked a little odd. And I thought, oh, dear odd woman, keep walking, please don't look at me. And she looked at me, walked on a little bit, then turned around, looked back at me and made up her mind and then said, hi, I have something I need to tell you. And I thought, okay, I'm in seminary. I'm supposed to love everybody. I'm going to go talk to her. And so I went up to her and she said, I have four things I have to tell you. And she rattled them off. But the one that I thought was the most potent and interesting, and I think applies to all of us because I think we don't realize. The third thing she said to me was, there's a train that's waiting for you to get on it. It is going around in a circle. So even if you can't get on it right now, it'll come back. But it's the train of forgiveness, and you need to forgive yourself. And she said, if you can't get on right now, it's okay. It'll come back. But you need to know that that needs to happen. And so, you know, she told me some other things too, but that one has haunted me ever since. And this happened like 8 years ago or 9 years ago at this point. Every once in a while, I'm like, what am I supposed to forgive myself for? But then I start remembering my childhood and I can't go any further because some of the memories are so disturbing and horrifying for me. And I think that all of us, you know, whether we realize it or not, part and parcel of our healing is forgiving ourselves, you know, whether it's for being a child and not able to help ourselves, whether it's for taking on a story from our childhood that doesn't serve us, whether we acted in a way that causes us shame now, whatever that is, forgiving ourselves, this is like really big work.
It's truly big work, and it's coming up in such a major way now with the energetic shift that we're all experiencing on the planet. It's almost making it mandatory that we go within and explore and lay down that fungo bat that we've been beating ourselves with. I think, you know, we come in with it and it's intensified the longer we're here. So, you know, it's just amazing that you've been able to get to that place of understanding that forgiving self is really essential. And I think it is. But I think also what really holds us prisoner often is this intense drive to prove to the one who's caused hurt and harm that they are wrong. And dropping that and letting them have their behavior, no matter how heinous. I mean, my older brother and I have such abuse between the two of us, and his childhood is almost completely blacked out. So my family members knew I was writing a book, but nobody asked me the subject. And I thought if they really want to know, they'll ask. And 2 weeks before the book was to be published, which was then titled Magical Illumination, Transforming Childhood Trauma into Adult Freedom, became, by my publisher's suggestion and with my approval, Toxic Family, Transforming Childhood Trauma into Adult Freedom, because that's truly what it was, but that's not how I feel about my family. I have so much love for them. So my brother, my oldest brother, to his credit, after the book was out, heard about it, read it, and called me. And his voice was that of a 9-year-old boy. He's the hero. He's the one you look up to. He's the one that's the strong guy and going to make it happen and doesn't feel. And it's really hard for me to be around him because the terror of the trauma comes up. But I also love him and understand his journey. And he said to me, I am so, so sorry. I wasn't a better brother to you. I don't remember most of this. And I apologize. And I so admire the way that you've handled your life and what you've walked through. And I am so proud of you.
Oh, wow. That is both astonishing and powerful. And wow. Bless his heart for reading your book. And I really also appreciate what you brought up earlier, that our ancestry, sometimes we're carrying stuff in our DNA that doesn't belong to us, but somehow it belongs to us, even though we're like, where did this baggage come from? What? I didn't deal with this. What? Because I think that's also important to understand, you know, your parents, as you stated, were both carrying the baggage from their childhoods, but also probably from trauma further back in your ancestors. And how do we figure out if, I love that you're an alchemist, because you're kind of reconfiguring, you're reshaping, you're working with even the stories from your ancestry and your DNA to create new things, to create delicious mulch for you to grow beautiful flowers from, or trees or whatever, what have you, you know, a pollinator garden. I love those, but it's dirty, messy work. And, you know, I've always loved playing in the mud. Sometimes it's more fun than other times, but it can be messy, messy, messy work, not really fun. And I just appreciate you describing yourself as an alchemist, because we need more of those in the world now to do that healing.
It's not something that I came to easily. I mean, in 2007, an Irish seer said, you have a book to write and it's going to help a lot of people. And I promptly shoved that under the nearest carpet. And then when COVID hit in 2020, two psychics back to back said, you've got a book to write. And the third one said, you have three books to write. And I thought, oh, before this turns into a fluffing library, let me just get started. And I mean, who wants to write a book called Toxic Family? It's a horrid taboo. But I have to say, like, I live in so much freedom, authentic freedom. Now I'm not carrying that garbage on my back that doesn't belong to me. And to watch others drop that, I mean, I'm feeling teary right now. And to see this with new perspective, as you've so brilliantly described, a pollinator garden, you know, mulch, I love it. I might have to steal that with your permission. But yeah, it's really amazing, because I'm not a slave any longer to this past dogma that has nothing to do with my being, other than, hey, maybe I came here and planned this all out so I could come to this grounded, authentic place of soul evolution and now help other people get through the same so they can help other people who are tied up. And when you get the trick of like what forgiveness really delivers, it's self-serving. There I was going through this divorce from an alleged narcissist. He took up residence in the master. I was in a partial conversion in our garage, in a home I bought and paid for a year. I made that place my monastery. I went deep within me, and there were times that I railed against the injustice, knowing he was going to get a 6-figure payout from my checkbook at the end of this show. And it was hard. I'm not saying I'm a human being. But when that rage would come up, I also knew I couldn't hold on to that, or it would be the death of me. It would eat me alive. I would be taking that rat poison, ingesting it, expecting him to fall down. And that was my mantra. And that's what got me through. And believe me, there have been miracles one after the other, all sprinkled through that experience and the years since.
And what a graceful segue. Thank you so much to the main nugget of my podcast, which is, you know, I would love for you to share anything that you feel comfortable with around maybe something you've either witnessed, it didn't necessarily have to happen to you, or something that you've experienced where you feel like you've witnessed a miracle or something magical in your life or something that changed even more than one story, whatever you feel comfortable enough sharing.
Wow. Well, I want to say it's how I feel about my mom. She's not here. She's on the other side, but we were very connected. And I want to say it was brutal. I mean, this is a woman who beat me almost to the point of passing out. I was 4, standing in line for my turn at the tub. And she just flipped. She just flipped. She could be so loving and then flip into this monster. And as I grew into puberty and as a teenager, it got worse. I mean, the violence, she beat me with a wooden spoon, with any object that she could get her hands on. The rules would twist and turn. I didn't know where I stood. And after a period of separation and a lot of work, I could uncover where she came from. I mean, she was molested as a young girl, and she was brutally beaten. And here she was holding that container, and now here she was in a marriage that recreated the scenario with worse circumstance. So to really get to the point where I could have compassion for her journey, and I could have respect for what she had faced and moved through, like basically raising 5 kids on her own, being left and saddled, that's pretty heavy. So I moved across the country from New York to LA for what I thought was a great career move, but it was yet again an opportunity for soul evolution. It's amazing how that works. But you know, I realized I was communicating after my mother left, after she transitioned. I could feel that I had been communicating with her telepathically the whole time. And I still feel her energy, and I call on her for help. And the relationship is exquisite and it's beautiful that I can have such great love for a brother who was horrible to me, brutal. That I can have such love and care and respect and honor for him. That's magnificent. That's living heaven on earth.
I think it's, you know, important to understand and realize that we can find reconciliation with people who might have harmed us or unintentionally wounded us, even while we're still alive. And it doesn't have to happen, you know, when they're on the other side. We can do it in real time in our lives and, you know, give those people grace, give ourselves grace. I mean, one of the power words is reconciliation. And it's beautiful and it encompasses so much. And there's so much power in it. It sounds like such an easy word, but inside it is an entire universe of possibilities. And I've decided to make it my word for the year, 2024, reconciliation. Because also reconciliation with self, you know, that's a big deal. Because, you know, I always think to myself, yes, I am this meat suit walking around. But as you've heard me talk about, I'm also in partnership with the meat suit. So I should be kind to it.
Absolutely. And I had no idea how to do that coming out of the household I did. It was how much you stood up, how brave you were. It didn't matter how cold you were, how little you were, you kept up with the rest of the group. And that played itself out in adulthood. I was bit of a master's athlete. First, it was marathoning, then it was triathloning, then it was becoming a nationally ranked master swimmer, having never done that in my lifetime. And it was all about getting accolades and attention and acknowledgement from the outside in rather than the inside out. And I had no gauge on how brutal I was to my body until I literally could not walk around my block. And even then, I was still dragging myself up to the pool and dragging myself into hot yoga, praying there'd be a parking spot up close so I could hobble in. And then that was ripped away, and gladly so. I mean, the universe definitely does for us what we cannot do for ourselves, and welcome those opportunities. Say yes, because this has taught me so much about being brutal to self versus being loving and caring to self. And there is a beautiful piece of my soul inside that I have kicked and shoved and muddied, and she has walked through so much as witness. And I'm so grateful to be in touch with that beautiful being. And she guides me now. I allow her, I give her the space and the honor and the grace, as it sounds like you have as well.
Thanks so much to everyone who chose to listen to this episode. I know parts of it were probably painful for some of you, so I'm very grateful that you chose to listen all the way through and really got to the part where Susan triumphed and emerged on the other side, wiser, stronger, and more powerful than ever. Please look at the episode show notes for Susan's website, as well as for how to buy Susan's book. I think we all need reminders every once in a while that we are more than capable of redefining our lives and becoming who we were always meant to be. And I think it's also a great reminder, this episode and the stories that Susan shares, that we have no idea what is going on in the lives of those around us. We all put on brave faces and we all put on brave fronts, but that doesn't mean that some of us are not suffering. It was a good reminder for me to have a little humility in the area of automatically assuming that someone's life is perfect. That may not, in fact, be the truth. And so I'm grateful to Susan for this conversation and for that really powerful reminder. Thank you for listening, and here's my one request. Be like Susan. Always understand that you can make change in your life, that you, in fact, are the powerful alchemist who's in control of your story, your healing, your reconciliation with the world and your stories. It's not the people who surround you, it's not the world you live in, it's you. You're the one. So be like Susan, understand that, and then reshape and remake your world.